This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Call to Action, the 11th episode in Season 1. Joining us today on Rebels Reactions is Steven Stanton, voice of Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. Steven is an incredible voice actor and a huge fan favorite, and we are honored to have him join us for a cup of coffee. Welcome, Steven.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Corey. Very nice to be with you guys here. I have my
dry martini all ready to go. The Star Wars Book Club.
Well, we are honored to have you, most definitely. As we talked before the show started, I've heard you on Rebel Forge Radio, and you just brought so many smiles to our faces, and you brought a little bit of terror, too, with your work as Grand Moff Tarkin. So if you could, tell us how you got involved with the Star Wars universe.
My involvement with the Star Wars universe goes back to doing old Ben Kenobi for LucasArts, and back with the old Empire at War and Battlefront games. That was the first time... That I ever did anything for LucasArts. And that, of course, is extended now to me doing that same voice for the new Star Wars Battlepod game, which I'm sure you guys have seen. It's Busters and GameWorks and places like that.
Awesome.
So have you guys played it yet?
Not yet. Dying to see it.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I think it's Dave and Busters is everywhere. And then I think if you've got a Sony GameWorks out there, any of those places, it might even be a Chuck E. Cheese. I don't know. It's all those kinds of places that have the big arcade-type games.
Yeah,
definitely well worth checking out. I mean, we had a Tarkin Vader challenge out here in our local Dave and Buster's. It's just, you know, it's kind of new. It hadn't been open very long, and they had just gotten the battle pod there about a week before. And so we did a challenge. I think Tarkin came out on top. I think, boy, I mopped the floor with old Vader. Yep, still got him on that old leash. We shortened it a couple of knots to kind of tie a knot in it.
Kind of jumped into the colonel there, it sounded like.
Oh, Colonel Meeber Gascon, yes. He doesn't fit, can't see over the controls, and there needs a booster seat, so won't be doing that for a while until Dave and Buster's gets their act together.
So after I did work with LucasArts, my very first thing that I did for the Clone Wars series was in Season 2. I think the episode was Duchess of Mandalore, where I came in and was asked to voice match Moss Ameda, the Chancellor's right-hand man in the Senate. And that, of course, led to other characters, including Tarkin in Season 3 with the Citadel trilogy. And I think that's things started to rock and roll with the series as well. And they started bringing in characters like that and really opening up the storylines. Like, okay, now we're starting to investigate these relationships that we all know from A New Hope, and just sort of spiraled out of control there with Tarkin wanting to get the death penalty for Ahsoka Tano at the end of Season 5 for the Jedi Temple bombing. So we explored a lot of great territory with those characters, the ones that were created just for the show and the ones from the prequels and the ones from A New Hope.
You bet. So what is it overall about Tarkin? And you're so great on social media with Facebook and Twitter, and you're just so engaging. And one of the things that Corey and I keep coming back to over and over again when it comes to Rebels and the Clone Wars, and we've been fortunate to talk to a lot of the actors, and you're always so fan-friendly and sincere. And you mentioned how much you've admired Peter Cushing. What is it about Tarkin that you find so captivating, and how much do you find yourself consciously channeling Peter Cushing?
Very good questions. Well, I'm just like everybody else. You know, I'm a fan of the film first. I mean, that's where my love for the film came. I remember sitting as a kid watching it in a theater and, you know, not knowing that much about it. You know, it's not like the 1970s were not like it is today, unless you were keeping your eye on certain movie magazines or, you know, like Starlog or something like that. There wasn't necessarily a lot of information out about films. A lot of times, you know, like I remember when I went and saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, I'd never even heard of it. I was there at the theater to see Outland, the Sean Connery film. And I was with a friend of mine. He says, this is supposed to be pretty good too. You know, so we went and saw Raiders. I'm like, wow, this is a really great film. But getting back to Star Wars, you know, I go in there and of course, you know, completely blown away by the, you know, the opening shot and all these special effects. And then that scene comes on where Peter Cushing comes on screen. Well, they had me right there completely. A lock, stock, and barrel. There was no way you'd get me to walk out of the theater at any point for anything, because here was a person that, you know, I'd seen some of his movies on TV. It's like, here they've got a horror classic great who's like one of the cast members. I didn't even know he was in the film. You know, the only person I knew from it other than Peter Cushing was Alec Guinness, and that was from watching like Bridge Over the River Kwai, something like, you know, Lavender Hill Mob. So, you know, I was sold completely by that, you know, And that's one of the reasons I think that I liked Harkin so much, is that I like the actor behind the character as well. I've enjoyed so much of his work. I really enjoyed him in Star Wars. So when the time came, you know, for the audition came out to, you know, that they were going to look at this this character, and I believe, and they used to send out auditions in the Clone Wars with all sorts of coded things in there, and they would change stuff, and they said that this was like a sergeant. And I was like, this is interesting. It's like a Sergeant Tarkin, you know. And I don't know if they did that to kind of throw everybody off base, you know. And then when I got to the set, you know, got the scripts, it's like, he's going to be a captain. So we knew we were pretty far off from being a Grand Moff. So I thought, this is going to be really interesting to explore where this young guy came from and his relationship now with the Jedi. Tarkin's a good guy in the Clone Wars. You have to remember that. Mm-hmm. You may not like him. You may disagree with his opinions and his attitude and his outlook on the military and how what he thinks of the Jedi, but he's fighting on the same side with everybody at that point.
Good point.
It was a great exploration of the character, a great jumping off point.
Yeah, they've managed to, along with James Luceno's novel, of course, they just added so much to the tapestry that is Tarkin, and I think you're a big reason for that.
Well, thanks. You know, one of the great joys of reading that book was the inclusions of all sorts of things like trivia that we all know about his boots not fitting, getting mm-hmm. fitted for the uniform. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows the story about the costume of his boots not fitting and him having to wear slippers. There's Mas Ameda is in the book, you know. Yes. The Findians, Maral Evol's people, are in the book. You know, I kept turning the page waiting for a Zilkin, Colonel Meeber Gascon, to show up. I was just waiting. I said, James Luceno has done his homework here. It's like there's so much in that book that just, you know, reminded me of you know, what we did on the show. And then, you know, for anyone who hasn't read the book, don't think that this is a complete story of taking it right up to A New Hope. This is just a chapter out of Tarkin's life. Mm-hmm. It explores the backstory of who he was as a child, how he was brought up, and it explores that first, not Anakin and Tarkin, it's Vader and Tarkin, and how the Emperor sets that up, and how each, you know, of those views the other guy, and is this relationship, this working relationship, going to work? You know, do they think the same way? Are they picking up things on how to win from each other? There's a really good conversation where Vader asks Tarkin why he gave the name of his ship, the name that he did. It's a great scene. It's not the kind of, you know, you never think about Vader sitting around having a cup of coffee, talking to anybody in sort of an informal way. And that's sort of presented in the book in a very interesting way. It's worth reading just to see that relationship start up.
And I think some of those scenes you're talking about, we were fortunate to have James on a few months ago when Tarkin came out, actually. And just the metaphor of the name of the ship alone, there's just so much power overall. And speaking of power, this is a new thing for Rebels Reactions, where we did have this with Freddie Prinze Jr. We talked a lot about A Rise of the Old Masters with him. When that had just come out. But now we're going to break down this episode, Call to Action, with Grand Moff Tarkin himself, which is really exciting. So, Stephen, we'll start with you, as we usually do on Rebels Reactions with our guests. What was your overall opinion of Call to Action? Talk about a very meta discussion that we're about to have.
Yeah. Well, you know, my reaction stems from not only seeing it, but from my initial reaction from reading the script. I read the script, and it was very unexpected. I did not expect the things that happened in the story to be happening on Rebels, at least not in the first season. And I was really surprised that Tarkin came in as strong as he did and, you know, did the things that he did in this. Seeing it, you know, Dutch and Kathy, they're with me. We all watched it together. Everybody was blown away. I mean, everything from the opening shot, the lighting, the animation, the attention to detail, the expressions on his face, the close-ups. And it just made you, you're like, wow, they just really upped the game in so many ways with that episode. I watched it over and over and over.
Corey, what about you? When you saw this one, what came to your mind?
Yeah, as Rebels does, it seems to always call back to the films and these little nuances that I forget about sometimes. Just the music and the ships and things used. It was just great to see classic characters back and how they interact with brand new characters and that dynamic. As we see the Empire kind of using its fist a little bit here and getting control of the situation on the planet, and how it interacts with our rebel friends and how we see them take that on. And it's just such a characterization to the folks working and driving these films. You, Stephen, of course, the voice work and all the animation and the music is just so powerful, I think, in these later half of the season here. It goes to show that this series is going to be very impactful in the overall saga. Definitely good stuff.
You bet. No, I agree. I mean, the opening sequence alone, you know, when you get the script and it describes it, you know, it doesn't really say what the music cues are going to be or what time of day necessarily it's going to be. I mean, Joel Aaron and his lighting crew did a phenomenal job. Kevin Kiner, his music, that was just awesome. Keith Kellogg's animation. I mean, just the whole package. I mean, the whole of that episode is just enough to make you just start drooling for more Star Wars.
Oh my goodness! This had a more of a cinematic feel than perhaps any episode we've seen thus far, I would say. And just the opening sequence, Tarkin comes out. We're used to seeing Vader come out of the Imperial shuttle. He's greeted by the Minister, Mr. Tua, and I love Tarkin's reaction here, Stephen. He instantly rolls his eyes. This backwater world? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, the animation was great. They they're always. Once again, just like we did on Clone Wars, they always break out the video camera on your first couple of days of doing a recording, so they get your physical, mannerisms and the things that you do, so they can kind of like use that to help, you know, sell the dialogue. And you know, you're always wondering did I ever do any of that stuff? You know, you have to wonder. But it was great to see the his reaction. I thought the animation on Tua was fantastic. She's so nervous and her hands are shaking. She kind of like doesn't know where to stand, and everyone else is like, "Calm down, woman." that's the thing that's so interesting about Tarkin, is that without carrying a blaster or a lightsaber or using the Force or anything like that, he's got everybody scared. Nobody wants him to show up. That's the last. You know, the only person they are scared more of him is possibly Vader or the Emperor. That's it.
Mm-hmm. A very good point. A very good point. And we learn a lot more about the motivation of the Empire, strictly there to protect the industrial interests of the Empire and the Outer Rim. And then Mr. Tua brings up the idea of a Jedi, and he says, "A sudden appearance of a Jedi, as if leaping from the pages of ancient history. It's a shame we don't have someone who specializes in dealing with them." I find it fascinating that he points out what the Jedi are to him, and he knows because he lived it. And he's not quite dismissive, but he's also looking at it like it's a children's storybook. And Stephen, what was your impression of Tarkin's discovery of the Jedi as far as them supposedly being on Lothal?
Well, I think there's a lot of things going into play here. Once again, if you got the backstory of the book, the novel, you understand Tarkin's admiration of the Jedi and their fighting techniques, and he understands that they have a lot of interesting things that they can do. He just doesn't think they go far enough. So he knows how formidable they are. And this is not a question for Tarkin. He doesn't look at the Jedi as a non-threat. He just doesn't think that he thinks they could have done a better job at helping to win the war. Then you've got a couple of other things going on. There's been enough distance placed and probably some propaganda put out about what happened to the Jedi that nobody's really sure of what they are, and they probably want to keep it that way. They don't want any sort of rumors coming around about Jedi, even though they, you know, Vader, the Emperor, you know, he's getting back to the scene with Vader talking to the Inquisitor at the beginning of Spark of Rebellion, where he says the Emperor has got, the Emperor sees this new threat, the Children of the Force. And, you know, the Jedi Knights are gone, more or less, but we know these are out there, and I want you to go hunt them down. And if they can't be turned to our side, eliminate them. Mm-hmm. So their goal is to track these people down and see if they can get them, like, come on, help us out, or you're going to be gone. Tarkin, you know, he's got the industrial interests of the Empire. I'm guessing at this point, probably the industrial interests are probably like supply lines and stuff for that mobile battle station. That's what I'm guessing.
Sure.
They don't want that to be interrupted. And they don't need anybody thinking that there's Jedi out there, or if there's some people that don't know what a Jedi are, they want to get rid of that. They don't want them, like he says later on, giving hope. So I think that's where he was coming from in that that opening scene.
Yeah, and this opening scene is great. Like you said, you know, nobody else gets off that shuttle, but we've seen Vader and the Emperor. And it's just a presence. And it's funny because I watched this episode with my kids, and my oldest son goes, "Oh, look, it's the old guy." he's seen the films. So it was really a blast to see that he recognized the character in some recollection, and it was really great to see their you know, their innocence too to the character, but they realized, oh, this guy is involved in Star Wars, and I can see the variation in the time frame here, and he's only 9 years old, so I say kudos to him. So good deal.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that was kind of funny, that while we were watching it, we noticed that the way Tua grabs her throat, it almost seemed like, maybe Tarkin is one of these Children of the Force, because it almost resembled like a force choke.
I agree.
It's like, uh-oh, well, something happened there. She just really kind of, you know.
So, she appears nervous, as you mentioned, and it's almost like there's a subconscious fear. Apparently she's seen people being force choked before. It's possible.
Yes, yeah, but I guess it's the hand going to the throat that's kind of like a key. Like she's actually physically putting her hand there. It's like, we've seen that before.
That's right. Very A New Hope. So many echoes to A New Hope in this amazing episode. And then we get a nice shift suddenly to our heroes, and Kanan doing some fancy shooting on a speeder bike. And Ezra, yet again, we see the youngest member of the crew. He stuns when he's firing away, and then we find out that the crew of the Ghost have very much been put out. It's almost like they're pictures in the hall of the post office, so to speak. And Ezra says, look, every time we win, we lose. We see again that Ezra has to figure out a way to be more mature than his actual age and to find some peace and not get discouraged, which is, of course, something that Anakin Skywalker had a hard time with in the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, the poor kid, he keeps going through one disappointment after the other. And I think this was a very important episode for him, especially for the scene that comes up a little later when Kanan takes him outside and has their little chat. Because he's constantly facing disappointment. But the thing is, what we don't know about him is, like, and I think Kanan sees this, Ezra has a lot of potential, probably as a Jedi. It's like, you know, you kind of almost get the feeling that this shows sort of Luke Skywalker character.
Yes.
He just doesn't know his own power yet. And yet he's, you know, because you get the feeling that he could surpass Kanan with his Jedi abilities. At least I do. I get that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, he's the hope for the crew of the Ghost, it seems. And I find it wonderfully ironic that they decide to use their version of propaganda to inspire. And Ezra says, that's a crazy plan, which is Kanan retorts with, well, that's why you like it. And I love that there's this continual push to share truth, which is a very positive thing to share with kids. And Corey, you mentioned you showed this to your kids. And did they pick up on things like that, this idea of knowledge is power and honesty?
No, I think some of that stuff kind of goes over their head. They definitely all like and can relate to Ezra. They like to see him in action, and some of the scenes they ask questions about, and I kind of describe to see what's going on in the scene and what they is kind of going on the episodes thus far, and you know, they just like to sit back and relax and enjoy it. And afterwards, the questions come up here and there. But I mean, even in this episode, this scene here too with Ezra and Kanan, they definitely have the relationship that's been building. We've seen it all throughout this whole season too. It's so nice to see them mesh well together, and mm-hmm. and it just shows their Padawan and Master relationship that seems to go hand in hand, and certainly we've come to this point, and they certainly it's so nice to see this, because it's something we've been wanting for so long, and then of course towards the end of the season or end of the episode, it's ripped away. So it's interesting the way that your emotion kind of goes with this episode.
Right, and Stephen, you completely nailed it when you talked about Kanan and Ezra go outside. Let's just say, let's go for a walk. A very paternal evidence there of the relationship that they have, and there's just a lot to like about these two and their relationship together.
Yeah, I mean, you almost get the feeling that the relationship is akin to like an older brother who has now found the younger brother's like a genius or something like that, and doesn't know if he's qualified to teach him. You know, Kanan's a great character, because he is, unlike Luke Skywalker, who really found out about the Force and everything from scratch from Ben Kenobi, Kanan was a Padawan, and he had a master, and that all got interrupted with Order 66, and, you know, he's been on his own, and he has a little bit of the philosophy. He doesn't have it all. He's trying to make it work, but, you know, his teaching was interrupted, and we know, you know, from things like Empire Strikes Back, what happens when your training is interrupted, because then things like anger and fear, those get the best of you, and you don't always make the right decisions, and then you fall into the hands of those that have foreseen very much, you know.
Well, it's true, and we get to a really chilling scene that I think was a complete jaw-drop moment for a lot of fans. Commandant Oresko and Taskmaster Grant, which we'd known Adam Bray had his Rebels visual guide before the first episode came out on the air on Disney XD, and we knew they were going to be important to a certain degree, and I think here their full emphasis for why they're on the show is revealed. And before we break down the scene more closely, Stephen, I'm fascinated to know kind of your thoughts on this particular scene, both as an actor and both just as a fan of the show.
The reaction was pretty much the same on both. I was just was completely shocked that there was something in the show on this level. I mean, there was, for the first season, and to see, you know, a couple of characters that, you know, kind of already been established, and to see them sort of like eliminated in such a violent and brutal way. I mean, Tarkin literally came in to, you know, he's in the office and building. He didn't even take him outside and line him up against the wall or anything like that. Right. He just did it. I didn't care about the carpet or the stains on the wall or anything.
No cigarette, you know, or anything. Yeah.
Nothing. No blindfold. They're just made examples of. I mean, the look of horror on both Callus and Tua's face is priceless. And actually kind of what's, you know, scarier are the looks on Tarkin and Inquisitor's face. The Inquisitor seems to be like, oh yeah, good, I get to do something.
Right.
And you know what's also interesting about that scene is that when he's bringing them in and he's asking for a report, I think it's Oresko says that no casualties. Now, either he's lying, because I saw a bunch of stormtroopers laying down on the ground and getting knocked off speeder bikes, or stormtroopers don't count. Maybe he meant no civilian casualties. But I thought it was interesting. I thought maybe he was just trying to cover, like, no, nobody got hurt. And of course, Tarkin ends up using that little piece of information against him anyway. So it didn't matter, I think, if he had said yes or no. He cornered him and let him know that, you know, our biggest problem is that... you're letting them get away with it, and now people are starting to think that there's a Jedi and that he's going to make a difference, and we can't have that. So you're gone. Right.
Well, and it's almost like he makes it like a personification, because, no, the casualty here is our reputation as an empire. You're allowing these Jedi to represent hope, you know, the key buzzword for the Star Wars saga, especially the original trilogy. And he mentions the fact that unity is a real danger, but I think perhaps as interesting as what Tarkin says is the fact that he makes an example of Oresko and Grint, but he does it in front of just a couple of people. He doesn't do it in front of the entire fleet or an army of stormtroopers. Hey, don't fail us. Don't fail what we're trying to do. It's just for the other leaders, and I think that speaks volumes about what he's trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, I think it really shows the the character of the man that we're speaking about here. So now, you know, we're getting the idea that him blowing up Alderaan is not so far removed. I mean, because if he's doing things like this, God knows what he's been doing anywhere else, you know, to prove a point.
Exactly. I mean,
in the Tarkin novel, he's even going to the point of like, I will blow up my own ship to get rid of the people that hijacked it. And, you know, his special mm-hmm. ship that he has, that the, he, you know, it's got all these special, you know, weapons and so forth on it. He's willing to give that up. And actually, there's even one where I think he's chasing them in one scene and he's getting ready to crash the ship that he's in. Everyone's like, you can't do this. You can't fly into this battle here. Everyone's going to die. And he's like, just full speed ahead. Let's go.
Right.
He's a risk taker. You know, he's willing to do, as he says at the end of this episode, you know, you don't know what it takes to win a war, but I do.
Yeah, chilling. He's very much in control. He's very much in command. And you've got to think that the Emperor every morning wakes up and he just has got to be so happy that he's got someone like Tarkin at his side.
Yeah.
Able to accomplish so much.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The relationship between the Tarkin, between Tarkin and the Emperor is explored somewhat in the novel. And Tarkin is one of those guys. Actually, everybody in Star Wars really, it seems like, is a glutton for power. I mean, actually, what does Darth Vader say to Luke Skywalker when he's getting ready to chop his hand off? He's like, join me and we'll get rid of the Emperor. We'll rule the galaxy together. It's like everybody wants to get rid of the Emperor. You know, it's like, get him out of the way. Let me get my shot at it. In the Tarkin novel, you know, you can just see Tarkin's constantly perturbed. Oh, he's calling me again. I got my battle station I'm trying to build. This guy, you know, he's always wanting something. The Emperor has, he's got loyalties, but, you know, as soon as people find a chance, they're all ready to take this guy down.
And that you keep referencing Lucino's book, and that really is one of the better Star Wars novels, I think, of the past 10 years. And just there's such a rich palette that they weave with the use of Tarkin and his character and what it means for him to, with his relationship is like with the Emperor and with Vader. It's amazing. And you're completely right on it. This is the kind of guy who will blow up a planet to prove a point, and he won't even think twice about it. He's a dangerous, dangerous man. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I was in agreement with you. One of the reasons that, it's part of the reason that we did the recorded excerpt with Jimmy Mack and Scott Allen of the 501st and my friend Michael Gregory, Miss Kathy. You know, we thought the book was so well done, it really deserved it. And the fans had been asking for, you know, they've been wanting me to read it. So we thought, well, we'll give them a portion of it and lay it down. Because if you're into the saga and you want to know more about it, and because the books are now canon, it's really important, I think, to delve into that, because there's so many clues there, I think, about what happened and what's about to happen. It's fine. You can watch the movies and you can add the television shows into that. But I think if you start taking the whole, everything that Lucasfilm and the story group is giving to us now, it's just going to make it even that much more fun.
So true. So now we fast forward to it. We see the familiar probe droid, although the much more the McQuarrie version of the probe droid, clearly. And I love when it says, how can you tell they don't see us? And Sabine says quite ominously, because we're not dead. And then Ezra uses a very unique force power that we don't see a lot of, maybe a little bit with episode one and Qui-Gon, but he communicates with nature. He literally communicates with the Lothcat, which attacks the probe droid, which is a nice bit of comic relief in all this heaviness with Aresco and Grant, I would say.
Yeah, because Kanan taught him how to do that in an earlier episode.
Uh-huh. That's right.
I was going to say, it's nice to see Ezra take control like that of the situation that they might have got stuck into as well. So it was a lot of fun. And like I said, I watched with my kids, and they loved it. They thought it was hilarious.
It is, and I love the probe droids. Those things are so creepy with that, you know. You know, you don't know what's going on. It's just, they're just like, you know, they're creepy. They're like bugs. It's like, are they talking to themselves? Are they talking to some other droids in the web
of communication. It's just they're great, creepy sort of bad guy machinery.
I love them. And here's a fun fact. Whenever Corey texts me, that's the sound effect I hear.
That's awesome.
It's pretty
good. Good choice. Good choice. It's like that. I'm sure that must freak people out when they're around you. Like, what was that?
My wife said, my wife looked at me and she goes, "What is that?" She knows about creepy. The Star Wars nest. Yes.
Right.
So Sabine says, "It's touching when you two bond. But I'm guessing that the probe has friends. So let's wrap it up." Her wonderful snarkiness comes through. And then Tarkin does something that, of course, he does later in A New Hope. He allows for a trap to be set. "I'm taking an awful risk, Vader. This had better work." This is sort of the precursor to him acquiescing to that sort of a plan. Kallus doesn't want to risk the communications tower, which is ironic. But the Inquisitor gets a chance to redeem himself. "Your faith will be rewarded." He seems to be subservient to Tarkin. Sometimes they appear to be equals. It's a very interesting dynamic that Tarkin has that he brings out in his comrades, so to speak. And I willingly am using the word comrades purposefully.
Yeah, I think he does have it's one of those things that about Tarkin that's still a mystery. Why do so many people listen to what he says? He's a human. You know, the Inquisitor could take out Tarkin, you know,
just like that. Second,
but nobody does. Vader, I mean, look at him, you know, Vader, enough of this. This bickering is pointless, you know, and as you wish, he backs off. Vader doesn't have to take orders. He can, you know, he can force choke anybody, but yet they do. They all do. So, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting the effect that he has on his, like you said, his comrades.
And it's very much its respect. I mean, there is legitimate respect there, mm-hmm. you know, through their interactions with one another. And I love when we talk about this communication that Ezra wants to do with everyone. Everyone will hear what we say, at least everyone who is listening. And I think there's something there. It's more than just about what you're hearing, but it's also about what you're listening. And, of course, as a teacher and as a parent, I very much know there's a difference between hearing and listening. You very much see that difference. So even though people will be perceiving and ingesting this message from an auditory standpoint, it doesn't mean they're going to take it to heart. But that is, of course, the plan. And when we see these connections, when we see all these different people walking through hearing this broadcast, you can see that there's something that's just on the cusp of how they feel. And it does something. There's a real impact here. There's a reason this is called Call to Action, both from the Empire's perspective and from the Rebels' perspective.
Yeah, you know, he's talking about people who have been listening to propaganda most of the time and are probably tuning out the broadcast. You know?
Right.
He's got to make sure that, you know, a lot of people, I'm sure when they hear some broadcast coming out, the first thing they do is just tune it out, go about their business. So, you know, he has a real concern on his hand about, I hope somebody just takes the time of listening or isn't at home and they just switch off, or, you know, their speaker, or I hope people actually listen to what we say and then, you know, like you said, think about it and maybe take action.
Well, we talked about, you know, Tarkin, just, you know, the folks around him, his comrades, you said, it's Kallus and Inquisitor, and it just seems like they don't do it themselves. They're kind of tiptoeing around him, and it's an interesting dynamic too, because we've seen Kallus and Inquisitor together in different respects, and their kind of hierarchy is a little bit kind of different. We don't know who's kind of following who and who's ordering who, and it seems like Tarkin needs to come in and kind of clean house a little bit and kind of get their act together as far as working together or you know, getting things accomplished. And certainly this is his plan along is to, you know, clean house again and make sure that these rebels are found and taken care of us with this trap.
Right. And then we go back to what Stephen mentioned before about Ezra and Kenan having that little walk. I love what Kenan says here about, look, I know you're afraid, but you have to move forward. When the time comes, you're ready to sacrifice yourself for something bigger. What Kenan is talking about is the ultimate act of love. It's a very strong motif what we have here in this story.
The Kanan to me kind of echoes Obi-Wan a little bit in this scene a little bit, and it also shows his graduation to becoming a master Jedi in a sense too, of seeing these dynamics in the Jedi way and learning them himself. from past episodes we've seen, and just becoming kind of at peace with himself to know that he may have to lay down his life in the future to make, you know, make things, make them, you know, win and have them complete their mission and by the end of the day. And if he looks at the bigger issues, maybe some of the things he wasn't seeing in earlier episodes of Rebels.
Yeah, I thought, you know, one of the things that Ezra says after he, after Kanan says, you know, so we got to sacrifice or something bigger. And Ezra says, yeah, it sounds good, but it's not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Kanan says, you know, well, you know, you and I are, we're going to learn this together. And then there's just that beautiful, you know, you hear the Force theme come on in the background, the music,
yes,
cue, Force theme. And then very much like, it's so interesting, they, the camera goes behind them as they're kind of like looking into the sunset sort of thing. You know, twilight is falling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much like Luke's binary sunset scene, except instead of you seeing that, the next shot is a binary moonrise.
Nice.
Down the way to the tower. It's kind of a really interesting sort of like blending of the emotion of that scene from the original Star Wars and this one. And it's just, it's, I'm not sure what was going on there, but I liked it. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, I agree. Very powerful. See, you, if ever I'm sick, you could sub for me for documentation literature. I like that. Very good. Very clever. There's something poignant and powerful about the brother or father figure saying, you need to move forward. You can't dwell on what you're afraid of. You need to move forward because that's what the Jedi way is. Another good allegory for children to learn as they're watching the show as well. And then we get to, you mentioned the binary sunset music plays, which is wonderful. Kanan makes sure that his friends, his crew, is going to be able to escape. And he takes on the Inquisitor in a very dramatic scene. And this is, gentlemen, where I really felt that real, sincere peril. We have no idea. We don't have 30 years of history for these characters. We don't know what's going to happen with them. So you really feel like at any moment, this could be the end for them. And we know the Inquisitor and Tarkin are there. This is really, really serious business. So I found this act of sacrifice amazing and powerful and frightening.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the... it's one of the more exciting action sequences that I've seen because, like you said, we just don't know what's going to happen to these characters, and so your heart starts to race because, you know, if it's Obi-Wan Kenobi or Anakin Skywalker, you know they're going to make it through. They might get injured or whatever, but you know they're going to make it because we know the stories that they have to be in yet. But with these characters, we don't know that yet. So, like you said, it becomes genuine fear for their lives.
And the Inquisitor, you see, like he's got a bit of admiration for Kanan. You've been practicing. He gets kicked in the stomach. And then he thinks it's really unexpected that Kanan would surrender. There's a lot to love about this particular scene. And how could you not love Kanan? What a character this is. What a performance by Freddie Prinze Jr. and just the writing for him. And when you know that Greg Weisman and Simon Kinberg are writing an episode of Rebels, you know it's going to be powerful anyway. But this scene completely delivers.
And even Kanan seems like to up his momentum as he battles Inquisitor.
Yes.
It seems like he's battling for, you know, every last move so that he can outmatch Inquisitor. And maybe this might be his last stand in a sense too. You know, he's obviously besting him in this duel. And as just the stormtroopers and Calcers just hanging out, kind of watching, you know,
yes,
he attacks right on every time. Whether before their encounters have been Inquisitor always kind of dominating the swordmanship, but I really like the sword play. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, the lighting in that whole sequence is great too. Everything from the red light inside the stormtrooper ships to the night sky, you know, everything about it is just incredibly cinematic.
Truly is, and the color red is such a powerful motif in Star Wars anyway, but all throughout Rebels, of course around the Sith we know why the red is there, but it's very, very strong, very, very indicative of what's going on. And I thought it was interesting, when Tarkin appears in this scene, he's got a helmet on.
Body armor, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously we know from a military perspective, he's going into battle. That's why he's doing that. I found it interesting, too, that when we saw Tarkin earlier in the scene, he makes sure a couple guys lose their heads. So now he's wearing a helmet. Symbolic.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, you've got to take into consideration, you know, what Tarkin is, you know, what
what's happened on this planet so far. You know, all these people have been getting their butts kicked. So yes. It's like, wow, they've bested my best. So I'm taking precautions. I know they say they've got them rounded up over here, but I'm not going in without a helmet and some, you know, a flak vest on, because these guys have screwed up every single time before. They might let a stray blaster bolt, or, you know, somebody throws a lightsaber at me. You know, he's not taking any chances, because these guys have failed him too many times up to this point.
Very much so. And I do want to point out, before we move to the end of the episode, I think it's interesting that we're going to learn more about Kanan's background through Craig Weissman's miniseries that's coming out through Marvel. I believe it starts in April or May. And it's almost like this is Kanan's reckoning, because he survived Order 66. Perhaps there's some PTSD there. It's not unreasonable to presuppose such a thing. But now he stays behind to help out another Jedi and his friends. Maybe he feels guilty, or had felt guilty, that he was one of the few survivors of Order 66. So I think this is a very, very... this might be the climax of the entire first season for Kanan, as far as the peak of his emotional journey.
I agree. I think there's a lot of good things in there, what you said. Season's not over yet.
That's right. Wow. That's right. And, yeah. And hopefully, I'm sure you appreciate it. We are so anti-spoiler. We're the opposite of spoilers, so we definitely don't want to learn anything before Disney is ready to show us, so to speak. I think it's important that I spent a little bit of time on this, probably more than I should, but, you know, we run a Star Wars podcast, so I had to do this. I wrote down everything that Ezra said in his message, and I'm just going to read it for you, if you don't mind. He says, "We have been called criminals, but we are not. We are rebels, fighting for the people, fighting for you. I'm not that old, but I remember a time when things were better on Lothal. Maybe not great, but never like this. See what the Empire has done to your lives, to your family, and to your freedom. It's only going to get worse unless we stand up and fight back. It won't be easy. There will be loss and sacrifice, but we can't back down just because we are afraid. That's when we need to stand the tallest. That's what my parents taught me. That's what my new family helped me remember. Stand up together, because that's when we're strongest, as one."
See, that
what can you say
right there? You know, it's just like 1939, World War II. You know, it's a great sentiment, and it's true, you know, what he's saying. So it's a very powerful way to end the show. I mean, that whole actually the ending of the show is even more powerful, you know, with the silence that comes on screen.
Yes, very much so. It's chilling. It's very much chilling. Great job on this one.
Dan, you mentioned that Kanan's kind of arc, this kind of shifts in this episode. But this, even for Ezra in this message he's sending out, this is a turning point for him as well. He's really taken a leap in his rebellion, if you will, in his active membership of putting his voice out there to go along with what they're doing. And certainly, you could have been anybody else from the crew that said it. But it ended up being Ezra, and I think it's because he's really grown up and found his stride as a young adult and becoming that freedom fighter that he's longing to be.
Well said.
Thanks.
You should do a podcast, Corey.
Corey, are you a teacher? We're all wondering if you're a teacher.
No. I'm a graphic designer. I do marketing, graphic design, so... But I've got four kids, so I got to instruct them all the time. So,
you are a teacher. You have four kids.
Yeah,
you're a teacher.
I teach literature and writing, and Corey is a graphic designer. So it's been a good combo for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you're the teacher, huh? Mm-hmm.
Star Wars in the Classroom, and I'm also fortunate to write education for StarWars.com.
Oh, really? Well, that explains the lesson plan you sent me before we started this episode.
That's right.
The syllabus. I got the syllabus.
That's right. Reading. Yes.
So as you mentioned at the end of this, there's the end logo, there's no real music of any kind. Do you remember, Stephen, I'm sure you do, Tarkin's very last words on this episode?
Yes, he says, "You do not know what it takes to win a war, but I do." And chilling words.
Mm-hmm. Took the words right out of my mouth. Extremely chilling, because you know this guy has seen some serious power in the military might in his mission, in his pathos, and it's unbelievable what's happening. And Kanan's gone. He's kidnapped. And now we've got some serious choices to make with the crew of the Ghost, and it's going to be exciting to see what happens. So, gentlemen, what we always do at the end of Rebels Reactions is, of course, the teacher and me. We give an overall grade for the episode. I know this is a tricky one because we've got this meta discussion going on, which is so powerful. But any last-minute thoughts before we give our grades for the episode, gentlemen?
Sure. Like I said, I watched this with my kids as well, and they got a lot of it. They really enjoyed it with the action and the characterization, and I as well. It was so nice to see Tarkin in this episode, and just see him just kind of bring his might and his presence to these characters and these situations. Because every time we've seen a canonical character come in, they kind of seem to not necessarily overshadows these characters, but they weave so well into the Rebels' lives. And I just nice to see them interact with brand new characters and play off each other. And the wonderful writing and such we've seen throughout this whole series, it's just kudos to the team there, and just all the creators and all the personalities and such that do such a great job handing these episodes to us. So it was another home run in my eyes, and I really enjoyed it.
Steven, any last minute thoughts for you on this?
Yeah, I kind of, I've loved this series from the beginning. I love the sort of like taking it back to the sort of swashbuckling fun of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I look at this episode as kind of like the Empire Strikes Back of this particular series, because the fun and games can only go on for so long and, in an ongoing series. And then things have to get serious, and real jeopardy has to come into play. And I think it really happened with this episode.
Very much so. There has to be cost. There has to be peril. There has to be some sort of significance to create that emotional buy-in. And it certainly has been delivered here beautifully. Corey, what is your overall grade for this episode? Now, no pressure, but Grand Moff Tarkin is right here.
Yeah, I feel like the Inquisitor and Callus at this moment right now. Yes. No, definitely A+ all the way, because it is so many things for me. We talked about the musical cues and just calls back to the saga itself. It's just an incredible episode, and I really liked it a lot. It was A+.
Steven, what about you?
I have to go with Corey there and give it an A+ too. Just from the standpoint of a fan, I give it an A+. And part of the reason, part of that comes from just being, you're talking to somebody that read the script and supposedly knew what was going to happen. And when the show takes me by surprise, even though I already know what the basic plot is, just the visuals alone and the way it all comes together, then, I'm a fan right there with everybody else, and A+ for me.
Well, it's unanimous. I don't know if we've ever had a unanimous for all three on Coffee with Kenobi's Rebels Reactions. But yeah, I think it's an A+ too. I think it's got everything you want. It's got some character development. It's got incredible fight scenes. There's power. There's poetry and the callbacks, which doesn't hit you in the face, but it's just like a very intense nod to what's going on. And there's real gravitas here, and it was beautifully done. And what an honor to be able to discuss this with you, Steven. It's been a real joy. And before we let you go, we have to ask you our five questions that we ask each guest on Coffee with Kenobi, in a very similar vein to Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton. And I'll just go ahead and start with the first one. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Oh, boy. It's always such a tough one because, without the first one, there is no other Star Wars films to put on the list. I always vacillate. It depends on what mood you catch me in. Sometimes I'll say it's Empire Strikes Back if I'm really in a kind of a visual effects sort of state of mind. And then for the love of the story, I always have to go back to the original, just because that's the one that started it. It was so different when it came out. It's just hard to put anything atop that.
Good answer. Steven, your favorite Star Wars character?
Let's see. Colonel Meebergas. No, let me think. Old Ben Kenobi, maybe. Tarkin. God, there's so many. I mean, it's hard to put a finger on one. There's so many that I enjoy for so many reasons. I mean, Alec Guinness is great. Peter Cushing is great. Lobot is great. come on. It gets too difficult to try to narrow it down to Wilroy Hood is great. You know, there's just too many, too many.
Well, if it makes you feel better, if we're ever fortunate enough to have you on again, we'll let you change your answer.
Okay. All right. Well, tonight we'll go with Wilroy Hood then.
There you go. That's the first.
That's the first.
Oh, I can't believe that. I would love to have Wilroy Hood's autograph. I don't know if anyone has ever identified who the actor is that is running through the, you know, the, through
Cloud City, yeah.
Cloud City with that data storage container with the frozen data in it.
That's right. The first premiere of Tupperware in Star Wars. And you know what else? Here's a fun fact. It turns out that was the very first role for Samuel Jackson. Just kidding. Okay.
So I don't think so. I think you need to work on get the Zoom going there on your DVD Blu-ray.
So, Stephen, your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Run, Luke, run. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of that. Yeah, I got a bad feeling about this. What about charming to the last? You don't know how hard I found it signing the order to terminate your life. It's a good one because it's very sarcastic.
Really, very much so.
Oh, because that's that whole little thing where they're doing back there where she talks about the stench and all that kind of thing. He's like, ha, 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 I had such a hard time signing the order to kill you.
If you're not careful, I may cut off your head. That's right.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's a great scene. I love the way he keeps scaring her and she backs up into Vader like, well, at least I'm protected here. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if she has to go to Darth Vader for comfort, you know it's serious.
Yeah, it's bad.
So, Stephen, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Well, you know, I collect all kinds of things. I don't collect Star Wars specifically. You know, I've been given a lot of things. My brother Roy, for instance, has sculpted 1/6 scale figures of three of my Clone Wars characters, Tarkin, Gascon, and Morallo Evol. So those are kind of at the top of my list. Fans have sent me a lot of different Tarkin things, too many to even display on the one shelf that I have in my studio with my Tarkin stuff on there. So there's a lot of things like, you know, a custom Tarkin logo and a sculpt and figures people have given me their very artwork that are just very, they're very memorable, you know, things to have because of people's love of the characters. And, you know, we actually did a whole project. We were having artists do their version of Tarkin and have a whole collection of those. And I also have the very first thing that was given to me as a memento on my first session of the Clone Wars. Dave Filoni gave me a little metal TIE fighter. I still have it in the package. He's like, here you go. Welcome to the show.
Well, that's cool. That's awesome. What last question for you. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Well, there's a lot in there, you know, everything that has to do with the Force. Yoda gets very metaphysical, you know, everything from like, you know, luminous beings are we, not this crude matter, however he says it. And, you know, there is no try, either do or do not. I mean, there's a lot of good things. I think it's part of the reason why Star Wars speaks to so many people. It has very sort of archetypal messages that really speak to the human condition. And everybody can relate to that, no matter what language you speak, you know, where you are in the world. I think that's part of its phenomenal success.
Very well said. And it's been such a joy having a cup of coffee with you and learning more about the insights into Tarkin and what makes him tick. And it's such a joy to be able to do a podcast with my good friend Corey and be able to talk to talented guys like yourselves. And you've done a lot for the community. And speaking of that, there's a lot of great things going on with the community at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim coming up in April. We can't wait. We're very excited, very blessed to be a part of it. And you've got something great going on with Celebration too that we'd love to hear more about.
Yeah, thanks. It's, you know, for everybody that can't get to Celebration, because I know a lot of people would like to get there and just for, you know, for a variety of reasons, whether it's, you know, financial or time considerations or whatever, you just can't get there. And everybody also knows, or maybe you don't know, that Official Picks, the people that put out all the official pictures from Star Wars and the Clone Wars and now Rebels, have just released the very first Tarkin picks from A Call to Action. And so I'm working with David Delgado at Echo Base Media. And for anybody that wants a signed picture of Tarkin, you can get in contact with Echo Base Media, and David's going to set up a private signing at Celebration where I get to sit down with all the different requests and the orders. And all the money that's raised for that is going to be given to the Starlight Children's Foundation. We're working with the 501st of Southern California, Scott Allen, who's the head of the SoCal Garrison, and also the 501st Legion Charity Officer. We've done so many events with them, and their 501st is such a great giving charity organization. So happy to be working with those guys. You know, we're not, you know, I don't make any money off of this. We're buying the pictures, you know, from official pics, so it's all done at our cost. So if you want to get your hands on that, on those new Tarkin pictures, and they look great, you can go online to official pics and see them. They got six up from just Call to Action. We don't know what's going to happen next with there's two episodes left, so there could be a lot of really cool things happening. But I know there's a lot of people out there that collect autographs or just like to collect the pictures. This is a really good opportunity to get your hands on something that's brand new, I've never signed these before, and that goes to a really good cause.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about official picks, you know the quality's there, and clearly you're an even better man than you are a voice actor, which is saying a lot because you're such a talented guy. And again, we can't thank you enough for being on Coffee with Kenobi. Where can listeners reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Well, they can go to Facebook. I'm there at Facebook. It's pretty easy to find. You just type in Steven Stanton. There's two pages that always come up because back in the old days of Facebook, you had to have a personal page in order to have a fan page. Personal page is there, but we don't really do that much with it. The fan page is where you can go to ask questions and find out what we're doing, you know, where I'm going to be, and, you know, Celebration and all that sort of stuff. And you can find me on, you don't have to ask to be a friend on the fan page. You don't have to skip that whole thing. Yes, Twitter is also Steven_Stanton on Twitter. You get a lot of information there, and, Yeah, Dutch is always talking to people there too. So, you know, if you need to get in touch with him if you've got questions about the signing event, you can contact him there too. Yeah. I see it all. I see everything that goes up on Twitter, everything that goes up on Facebook. I try to answer as much as I can. You know, the schedule gets so crazy sometimes. Sometimes personal messages don't get answered right away, but we always take time during the week at night and on the weekends to catch up and see that everybody's taken care of.
Well, yeah, you've always been so gracious to Coffee with Kenobi and my own personal Twitter account, too. So we appreciate that. Do you have any upcoming projects that you're able to talk about that you wanted to just tell everybody about real quickly?
Let's see. What can I talk about? Let's see, guys. Can you think of what's the brain trust here is going to help me out here. I never know what I can talk about and what's coming out. And yes, I am working on a new live action pilot that
wow. –
going to be a part of. You'll be able to see me, it's not so much just hear me. That's working on that this summer. And what else? The for anybody that's interested in the film Life Itself, which I narrated in the voice of Roger Ebert, that just got released on Amazon and Blu-ray. So if anybody hasn't seen it, hasn't been able to track it down, it's now you can order it as a Blu-ray or on digital download. So a great film. If you love movies, if you love Roger Ebert, it's definitely it's just a heartfelt, it's a great film. It's a great documentary. And what else? Oh, yeah. We've got, The Sarge, which is the stop motion animated series that was up on YouTube a while back, is being, and yes, you're right. It is. We put it all back up again. We package that up as DVDs and are sending it out to troops around the world and hospitals so that we found out that there were some rehab centers that were already using it online to get people laughing about things and get their spirits up. So we want to make it easier for them. They don't have to look for it. We've got it on DVD and we're sending it out. So
wow,
that's awesome.
That's really great. Awesome. Well, I don't know how you find time to sleep.
Boy, you're busy.
Yeah. I don't, actually. There's not a lot of sleep going on in my life right now, but it's all good. You know. Oh, yeah. And then we got, of course, the 7D on Disney XD, the other Disney series that I'm doing with Billy West and Maurice LaMarche and Bill Farmer. All about the Seven Dwarfs prior to their involvement with Snow White. Directed by Tom Ruger, who did Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain. That
oh, wow.
show just keeps getting funnier and more wacky. So if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth checking out. I play Sleepy on it, so I do a lot of
There we go.
So you get your sleep in, I guess, right?
That was great. Yeah, you almost sounded like Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters there, too.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. Well, there probably he saw Ghostbusters at least once or twice, I'm sure.
Well, thank you again, Stephen. We will certainly put a link to all of your information in our show notes.
Thanks so much. Same with you guys. And, you know, keep your, I mean, just buckle your seatbelts up because we got two more episodes left and it's going to be a wild ride.
Very good. Well, again, thank you, Stephen, so much for being a guest on Coffee with Kenobi. And we will chat with you soon.
You got it. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Stephen.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.